Golf Smarter number 107 for January 2, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
The top 100 blogger continues his global quest.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Happy New Year, and thank you for listening to another Golf Smarter podcast. I hope you had a great New Year and that your head is clear enough to listen to what we have to say today, which is that Kenny Nicholson is here from Edwin Watts Golf. He answers questions about taking a blowtorch to change the shaft of a putter. I'm not kidding. Buying clubs for a left-handed beginner for under $600, carrying multiple putters in your bag, and will announce the winner of the Guy & Rife putter giveaway. Our guest today joined us last year at this time, and we promise to have him back each year because his quest is so much fun, and it's fascinating too. The top 100 bloggers set out to play the top 100 courses in the world, and if you haven't been reading his posts, this is the next best way to follow his journey. Now, to maintain his anonymity, he prefers we not use his real name. So today we say, welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Fred. Enjoy being here.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got to do... Last year we called you Joe. You want to stay anonymous, and this year we'll call you Bill.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. How was your year?
I had a very good year. I played in another 11 of the world's top 100 courses, including a course that I wanted to play in France, the only course in France ranked in the top 100, which proved very difficult. So that was a key milestone. And played some very difficult to get on courses. The Chicago Golf Club, which only has 125 members, is a very tough course to get on, was able to do that. Traveled around the country and around parts of the world once again and did very well. And by the way,
yes,
also got to play Pine Valley, the number one ranked course in the world.
Wow.
As an added bonus in there. So it was a very, very good year as far as golf goes.
Yeah, a very good year indeed. So let's get over, let's back up just a second to give people an overview. You are working from which list?
I'm working from the Golf Magazine list, which is the top 100 courses in the world. It's the list that they published in 2003, and I decided to just stick with one list rather than go with the list that comes out every 2 years, because otherwise you're trying to hit a moving target.
And that's not what golf is. We're not talking baseball. This is golf.
That's right.
And how much has the list changed since 2003?
It changes. The top 50 courses, frankly, don't change that much. Mm-hmm. They're pretty constant, with some exceptions. The courses ranked, let's say, 75 to 100 change quite a bit. So my guess would be probably 15 or 20 courses have changed. But it is a moving target, so some of the ones that come off in 2 years go back on and so forth. So it's still quite an experience.
Well, I want to get the highlights and disappointments of your year, but how many countries did you end up going to?
I played in France, Spain, United States, Canada, and Bermuda.
Bermuda?
Yep.
Where'd you play in Bermuda?
I actually played, I don't know that that's technically on my list. I played the Mid-Ocean Club in Bermuda, which is a Charles Blair McDonald course. It's a very, very good golf course. He's the same gentleman that designed both Chicago Golf Club and National Golf Links of America on Long Island. So it was very nice. Played that on a beautiful day.
And you're saying that that was not on the top 100?
Was not on my list. Not on the current list. I think that's one that comes on and off the list.
Well, that's an interesting thing. So now you're not strictly adhering to your top 100. You take opportunities where they come.
Correct. And so, for instance, I played, there's a couple courses on Long Island in New York, Sabonic and Friar's Head, which are not on my list, both of which are world-class courses that are on the current list. I played both of those in the last year. So no, if I'm invited to play at a top golf course, even if it's not on the list, I almost always go.
Oh, okay. Now, you take like a weekend because you take time off of work, or you just leave Friday, come back Sunday type of thing?
Who says it's not work? Maybe I'm entertaining clients. No, I play most of these courses during the week.
Really?
I'd say only a handful. I've played 71 of the top 100, and actually only a handful I've played on weekends. Most of the time, it's easier for a member to bring out a guest on a weekday.
Oh, I see.
But typically, I'll play on a weekday, either take a day off or go out with a client or be entertained by a client or a colleague or something along those lines.
You accomplished 11 courses this year.
Yes.
Is that a high number for you or
actually,
on your list?
It's a low number for me. Last year I did 16 courses, and the year before I did 15 courses. Part of the reason I didn't do as many this year is I've essentially completed all the courses in the British Isles. So there's 24 courses in the British Isles on the list. I've played all but Loch Lomond in Scotland. So in prior years, going over to Ireland or Scotland or England, you could typically knock off 5 or 6 courses in the course of a week. I didn't have the opportunity to do that this year because I've completed all but one.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a long-range goal of when you're going to be finished by? You said you've done 71 courses?
Yeah, I'm doing... my plan is to basically try to finish it within 3 years. So I have a rough plan to play another 10 or 11 next year, and then the same for the year after and the year after. So my goal is to play basically 10 more a year, finish it within 3 years.
And then... you start all over with 2010 list? I mean, what do you do then?
I don't think so. I think that's enough of a goal. Then I'm going to go back and I think just play some of the courses again that were really off the charts that I enjoyed a lot, and then that'll be it.
And how will you remember? Will you go back through your blog and say, oh, I remember this one, or will you just, you know which courses you want to go back to?
I know off the top of my head which ones
sure.
I can play.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating, and I love the fact that you get support from home to do stuff like that. You want to fulfill this goal in your life, and it's just for the fun of doing it, right?
What's interesting is the support is waning, which I guess is understandable after 71 courses. I played a course, Quaker Ridge, which is in Westchester County above New York City this year, and I don't want to give away too much, but not that far from where I live. So I went and played and was back basically by dinner time. I thought, boy, this is as good as it gets. But I got a lot of heat for that one, oddly enough.
Ooh.
Yelling at me that I play too much golf. So.
You're not alone. Listen, I play locally. I can't even get out of my county, and I play too much golf. And it's a 9-hole course.
There you go.
Wow. So what are the highlights of 2007 travels?
Couple highlights. I would say the first is Morfontaine, which is a course that is located north of Paris. So Morfontaine was built in the 1920s by an Englishman by the name of Tom Simpson. It's a very exclusive, very private club. So for this year on the blog, I had a new feature where throughout the year, I would just chronicle my attempts to get on the course, which were actually very comical. So I would call up the course, and I don't speak French. You know, I would talk to the manager there and ask if I could play, and trying to get through the language barrier. And obviously, you can't just call up and make a tea time and play.
Yeah.
So went back and forth with him on that and posted my progress up on the website. One of the things that Morfontaine does is they give an honorary membership to whoever the current U.S. ambassador to France is stationed in Paris. They give an honorary membership to the U.S. ambassador. So I tried calling the U.S. embassy in Paris to try to get on and was rebuffed there. That didn't quite work out.
Why?
And tried. I don't know. That's what I thought.
I thought that was brilliant.
Thought it was a good idea. So
yeah.
Tried 5 or 6 different ways to get on, and actually ended up, the course has, I think, something like 18 or 20 members that are Americans, oddly enough, and was able to network and gain access to it through an American member, and he arranged for us to play. So in October, I went over and played Morfontaine. And this is also the first time where day by day I would just go onto the blog and tell people about the progress. So when I arrived in France, I put a post up, and then, you know, as I was progressing each day, put it up, which I got a lot of good comments and feedback about that. So the course is actually, I would say, one of the most difficult in the world to find. It's hidden in a very deep forest north of Paris, very tough to get there. And French workers only work a 35-hour work week. So, and it's a gated course. You once you find it, you drive down this long, winding driveway, and you get to a gate. And the course doesn't open before 9 o'clock because with French labor law, they can't, you know, they're only limited to 35-hour work week. So they strictly open at 9 o'clock. So that was quite an experience, you know, waiting around. But once we got in, they were charming. They were very welcoming to us. It was a group of four Americans that went in there. And it's one of the best experiences I've ever had. I mean, the clubhouse is an old French chateau, and they made coffee for us. We were able to sit there and relax. We went out and played. When we were done, they offered to let us go and play again, which we did. We had a nice lunch.
Nice.
They probably has the best wine cellar of any course in the world, being located in France. They are very, very good wine.
Yeah, have you ever heard or played Mayakama in Northern California?
I have, actually. Yeah, I've
because their wine cellar is...
That's the best locker room in the world, I think, Mayakama. I've never been to Seminole, which I hear is also a very good locker room, but... That's the one where you've got the fireplaces and the wine cellar.
Yeah, they've got cellar built right into the mountain.
Yeah, it's on a par with that. It was just a very unique experience.
And doesn't the locker room there have wine racks for each locker?
It does. I think each member at Mayakama has a wine locker. Yeah. Yeah, that's in Sonoma or Napa, right?
It's actually Sonoma County, yeah.
Yeah, Sonoma County. I played. That's a Jack Nicklaus course. I played there a couple of years ago. Nice course.
Very nice course. And it's only been open a couple of years, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so where did Moorefontaine fall in the rankings of 2003?
I would say it's one of the places, when I'm done with the quest, I would definitely fly across the Atlantic again to play it. I would say it's probably one of the top 10 courses I've ever had the privilege to be on.
Wow.
I mean, it's really a unique and special place. So Tom Simpson, the architect of the course, also designed Cruden Bay in Scotland. He was a co-designer of that, and that's also one of my personal favorites. I would go back to Cruden Bay at any time as well. So it was just the overall experience of just being in France and totally different private club environment, and that was very unique. The other highlight that I would say is a course that not many people have heard of. It's called Yeamans Hall. And Yeamans Hall is located in Charleston, South Carolina, designed in 1925 by Seth Rayner. And same type of club, extremely private, not many members, was able through a colleague that I work with to gain access to it. And again, it's got a private gate, and you drive up to the entrance gate. And then once you're through the entrance gate, you drive for about 2 miles on a dirt winding road through these live oak trees with a Spanish moss hanging down, where it's kind of dark and you're in the middle of nowhere. And then you get out of the forest, and it opens up onto an absolutely spectacular golf course that's set on a marsh. And I think it's surrounded by 800 or 900 acres of open land.
Oh, my
gosh. You're in the middle of nowhere. And it was built by, I forget, you know, railroad barons or people in the 20s that used to go down there in the winter as a retreat to get out of New York and the East. So it was, again, a very special place because it's a beautiful golf course. Seth Rayner is a good designer and has designed some of the best and most interesting holes. And, again, very welcoming atmosphere and just the unique clubhouse, again, and the Spanish moss and being down there and totally isolated. Yeamans Hall was a very nice place to play. Chicago Golf Club I enjoyed as well. Chicago Golf Club is the number 31 ranked course in the world. Located in Wheaton, just outside of Chicago. And Chicago Golf Club has the distinction of being the first 18-hole golf course in the United States. It's one of the five founding members of the USGA. So it's got great history, a nice old antique vintage clubhouse. And most of these courses, so both Moorfontaine, Yeamans Hall, and Chicago Golf Club. What always amazes me at these clubs is there's virtually no one on the courses. So you go out in the middle of a beautiful day, a weekday, and maybe there's 10 or 15 people on the entire course. So to some degree, wow. I mean, it's real privilege to be out there first.
Absolutely.
But it's to some degree, it's a waste of these beautiful courses that more people aren't allowed onto them and play them and see them because they're just such good holes.
Do you find that frustrating? It's like too elite for you, or it's like that's just the nature of the beast?
No, I actually like it. I aspire to join one of them one day and to be a part of that. But I'd have to put my kids through school first before I consider that.
I know it well.
Yeah,
I'm almost done.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I also played. There's some some very good public courses. So two public courses that I was able to play this year. I played El Saler, which is in Spain. It's just north of Valencia. Beautiful course, right on the Mediterranean. It's a links-style golf course. Wasn't that expensive to play. Got hooked up with some locals who were, again, a bit of a language barrier, but who were very nice, had a great round, had drinks with them afterwards. And I also played Harbortown down in South Carolina as well, which people are familiar with. It's a tour stop with the lighthouse on the 18th hole. And I liked that quite a bit too. And that was, again, got paired up, went out by myself, got paired up with three people I'd never met before. And that's the beauty of the game. It's just, you meet great people. And it was a great environment, a beautiful day, and that's why we play golf, right?
Absolutely. And when you're going to be playing public courses, and you know that you're going to be playing public courses in advance, do you travel with anybody to play with, or you're generally out on your own?
No, I usually do it as part of either a trip that I'm on or a family vacation. If I can, I will be with someone. Those two, I happen to be alone this year for various reasons, and just went out and played them myself. So it worked out great.
And do you try to rank these yourselves, or you just want to use their ranking and you go ahead and play it? I mean, like, do you have criteria for which you say, you know what, this says it's in the top five, and I don't buy it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, one of the things that I do on the blog is offer my own opinion of courses, and there are several courses that I think don't even belong on the list or are highly overrated. And what's interesting about the blog is I can do a lot of research on a course. Like Moorfontaine, I did research about what happened to the course during the Second World War. It was actually overrun by the Nazis when France was occupied. Did all this great research. Yeah. But when I write positive articles, I don't get as much feedback. When I write anything negative or slightly negative, I get 10-to-1 more comments on that. So it's interesting.
Welcome to the media.
Yeah, exactly. They react a lot more to the negative ones.
But sure.
I definitely have my own view on the courses and which ones rank high and which ones I think are overrated.
What kind of traffic, not necessarily traffic, but I guess feedback, comments, invitations that you get from the blog, how is the blog working out for you? Or is this, this was just starting out to be, my own notes, I guess, but it's probably...
Yeah, it started out really to share information with friends and with people that I've traveled with over the years.
Sure.
And I didn't do it to meet new people or to make contacts, but as I said, three courses I was able to play. Members invited me to their private clubs, didn't ask for anything, and really they're people that just love golf. And two out of the three courses, the people that invited me were also playing the top 100, and we just had 4 or 5 hour fascinating conversations comparing notes about which courses we had played, which ones we like, which ones were underrated and overrated. So that's really turned out to be a great side benefit of this. I've had a lot of people contact me and ask for advice on how to get onto courses, which I typically can help them with in terms of how to approach it. So there are maybe 10 courses, even though they're private courses, if you approach the professional the right way, or if you have the pro at your club call them, you can gain access to them. So knowing which of those clubs and how to do that is a real tip for people. And then the people that have invited me out, I'm helping them trying to get reciprocity onto some of the courses that they need to get on. So it's turned into a nice little way to meet people and to network and to get access to courses.
Are you going to be starting the Top 100 Golf Society? It sounds like there already is one.
It's an interesting thought, yeah.
There's already a group of people who are doing this. Man, so you're not the only one doing it, you're just the one writing about
it. No, actually, as I go around, I find that there's a fair number of people. Now, some are just doing the domestic courses, the ones in the U.S.
Larry Burley.
Right, yeah, I've spoken to Larry. There's quite a fraternity. I've spoken to, I think there's 12 people that have completed the World Top 100. Larry sent me an email through the blog. I had a nice conversation with him, compared notes about that. He had the best story about Augusta, where he was just called and invited out to play, which is, he doesn't know how lucky he is for that. That's by far the hardest course on the 100 to get invited to.
So, interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm in contact with, active contact with three or four others that have completed and are trying to help me out.
You said there are 12 people that have completed the top 100 list.
Are they
all working from the same list?
No, many did it 10, 12 years ago.
Right.
And yeah. But as I said, I mean, the top 50 or 60 courses are pretty static.
Yeah.
You know, with some exceptions.
But the quest continues.
Exactly.
So tell me about your disappointments over the year of courses that you played that you were just thoroughly unimpressed.
I would say none really fit into the category of unimpressed. I played Scioto, which is in Columbus, Ohio. It's ranked 71 in the world. It's a course Jack Nicklaus grew up on or played when he was growing up. That was a good course. Probably should rank maybe in the 70s or around there or so. So that one I wouldn't necessarily go back and play again. It's hard to say that I'm going to get killed for this comment. I don't want to say Pine Valley's a disappointment, but personally, I wouldn't rank it as the number one course in the world. Located in southern New Jersey, and it's a very unique experience. So Pine Valley, in addition to being a golf course, is also its own town. So it's the township of Pine Valley. It's got its own... got one building which houses the court, the school district, and it's just a sham. I mean, there's nothing really there, although it's legitimate. It's all registered with the state, surrounded by a fence all the way around it. So sort of in a nice middle-class neighborhood, hidden in the back. You pull up to the gate, and they have their own police force. They actually have, I think, a half dozen policemen. The policeman lets you through the gate, and you come in to a little guardhouse, and then you go up to the clubhouse. So the overall experience is out of this world. I mean, it's just something that complete isolation, and it's all golf. The thing that surprised me there is there's really no frills or anything. It's a very modest, very basic clubhouse. And when you talk to the people there, they really just want members that are good golfers, and that's all it is. There's no tennis. It's not a country club. So I was able to play it twice on the same day, which was great. And you're in total isolation. It's very hard. I think the slope rating is 150.
Oh my gosh! Isn't that as hard as it can get? I thought 145 was as high as it can go.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest courses in the world. The fifth hole, which is a par 3, 230 yards uphill, is one of the hardest holes I've ever played. And actually, the course is, to some degree, it's fair. The fairways are wide, so I was surprised. I think I hit all but two or three fairways, but I didn't score well. The second shots are very difficult there. You have to, if you're not on the green, the entire, there's sand almost all around the course, which is not raked and is a hazard, and you can't ground your club in it. So if you're off a fairway or a green, it's very difficult. So I would say Pine Valley is a unique place. It's a very special place. Would I rank it number one in the world? Probably not. So
would you rank it in the top 100?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be in the top 10.
Okay.
You know, It's, and what's interesting is, you know, you asked about how much does the list change. Pine Valley has never been anything but the number one ranked course in the world ever since these things, these rankings have been done. It's always been number one for whatever reason. So there's unanimity among everybody that rates it that it's the top course in the world.
What do you see as a common thread between these top 100 courses?
A lot of them were designed long ago. Now, you know, having said that, there's some exceptions, you know, Pacific Dunes, you know, stuff that Tom Doak is doing and some modern architects. But a lot of them were done during what's called the golden era of golf design in the 20s and 30s. So I do see a lot of commonality there in terms of it. They're very good. All the great courses are risk reward, so they offer you, you know, so even if you're not a scratch golfer, they provide a line of play that an average golfer can play along. But then they also offer for someone that wants to take on a little more risk to be rewarded, maybe with a closer shot to the green or an easier putt. So I see a lot of commonality in terms of risk reward shots. And believe it or not, aside from Oakmont, almost all of them are playable for the average player. I think Oakmont is too hard, even for the average golfer, which, you know, people saw at the U.S. Open this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Top100golf.blogspot.com. You've got to go and check this out. I mean, Bill, Joe, whatever you want. He's going to keep his anonymity here. That's fine. But definitely worth the read. Now, you know, you said earlier you were talking about Pine Valley and you're going to get letters and stuff, but you're anonymous. What do you care, right? Do you let people know when you're with them that you're the blogger?
Yes.
Okay.
Typically I do.
But you make them sign a release saying they can't tell anybody?
No, in fact, most of the time, I mean, I tell them, I mean, if they're nice enough to invite me out, I tell them who I am. And, you know, So, no, they know who I am.
All right, well, I got this nice little nine-hole course down the street. Want to play with me? I'll finally get to meet you.
Cypress Point? Yes, I'm available to play.
Yeah, exactly. Not that street. Well, thanks so much for coming. How about, are you going to come back next year? We're going to, you know, I would love to start each year with your comment on the previous year.
Sure. Yeah, I've got big plans for next year.
Give us a hint.
I'm looking at going to Japan.
Oh.
Yeah, there are three courses in Japan that are on the list. And again, this is going to be similar to trying to get on the course in France. This one's going to be tough.
All right, we've got a listener there, Hiro Kobayashi. We have a couple listeners in Japan, but Hiro Kobayashi's a good friend of the Golf Smarter podcast.
Oh.
And Hiro, why don't you write to me and see if maybe you can get a picture of the guy.
There you go.
And play golf with him. All right, Bill, thanks so much again.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, and
you too.
Safe travels this year. We want to have you back next year, okay?
Appreciate it. Thank you.
It's time to ask Kenny. Do you need informed answers about specific golf gear or have questions about what to look for when buying new golf products? Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist at edwinwattsgolf.com, is here to help. To submit your question, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. If we use your question on the show, we'll send you a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com, America's golf club. La-di-da. Kenny?
Hey, Fred. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm fine. Did you have a nice New Year?
I did, yeah. Pretty much lazied around and did nothing. It's cold here in Florida.
Oh, really? You didn't travel or anything?
No, I didn't travel at all, which is great.
But you didn't go into the office either, I hope.
I actually came into the office New Year's Eve and heard how many voicemails I had, and I logged out and went right back.
So you heard the voicemails and said, that's it, I'm done, I don't want to hear it.
I'll take care of that on Wednesday.
That's good. Very good. Hey, we got a bunch of stuff to take care of since it's been a while since we spoke. So let's get started here. We also are going to announce the winner of the Guy & Rife putter. We're going to announce a new product to give away. But we have some questions that people still have been sending in, and we still appreciate that you write to us. And the first one is, and actually it's about Edwin Watts Golf. And somebody, this is John Schneider from Kingston, Massachusetts. So I guess that must be outside of Boston, because he wants to know if there's a difference in the product line or the pricing between a company-owned Edwin Watts store and a franchise store.
Which, him living in Boston, he is close to one of the only franchise locations that we have, which are about five locations up in the Boston area. And yeah, the discounts apply to Edwin Watts-owned golf shops. We do have a couple of franchises that that discount does not apply at. Early on, Edwin thought that he wanted to franchise originally, and then decided that if his name was going to be on the building, that he was going to own everything. So the guys up in Boston do a terrific job, and they are our only franchise stores that we have.
Oh, so actually, John also wants to know about the 10% discount that Golf Smarter listeners receive and Golf Better listeners receive. Will he be able to get that 10% discount at the franchise store?
No, he will not. He can buy online, obviously, and receive that discount. And we can ship it to him, no charge. So,
all righty. Well, sorry about that. So don't try to do it at the store, but you can get your discount online, and you will also get a hat, John. Congratulations. Let's go over to Victor Baez, who writes to us from Miami, Florida, and sometimes in the Dominican Republic. He bounces back and forth. He's a longtime listener and also has his very own Weekend Warriors podcast, which is a golf podcast in Spanish. I've talked to him before. It's very cool.
That was a plug, Fred.
That's okay. I like Victor, and he does a good job on his show. I don't mind plugging him. He needs some help buying some clubs for his dad. His dad, who's 65 years old and left-handed, has just started playing and is hooked. Loves the game, but he uses an old set of irons that Victor used to play with. So Victor finally convinced him to buy a new set of irons, preferably a hybrid set, and he's not really sure which ones to buy. He'd like to keep the price at around $600. He was looking at the Adams A2 irons with the graphite stiff shafts. Is that a good one for a senior?
No.
Not a good one?
No, not a good one for a senior. Stiff has to do, the flex has to do with swing speed, and somebody that's 65 obviously doesn't probably have a swing speed high enough to use a stiff flex. He wants to get something in either regular or senior flex. And if he was to email me with the yardage that, say, he hits his 8-iron normally, I would be able to tell him approximately what shaft he needs to get. But the chances of it being stiff are pretty slim.
All right. So then he's curious about either the Adams A2 irons or the Hogan CFT hybrid irons.
And he's left-handed.
Yes.
Yeah, see, either one of those would be a great set with a hybrid iron set. What you have typically is a lower center of gravity to help get the ball airborne. It's really difficult to hit those clubs fat. It's great for the beginning type golfer. He could choose either one of those. Adams also has a complete set in the A3 line where he gets irons, woods, putter, and a bag. So he would get basically everything that he needs to play golf and everything be brand new. So that's another option for him to look at as well. So instead of just getting a set of irons, he can get woods, bag, putter, everything.
Excellent. Here's a good one from Tim Stafford of Nashville, Tennessee. He says he struggles with the yips a bit, especially at the beginning of a round before an adult beverage or two. A friend has recommended the heavy putter, which sounds interesting to him. His question is he allowed to carry two putters in his bag as long as the total club count is 14 or less? And I think he wants to have one putter for before beverages and one putter for after beverages.
Maybe he needs a beverage before he starts playing.
Or avoid the beverages all and just focus on your golf game.
You can carry as many putters as you want, or any club for that matter, as long as you don't exceed 14. If you remember correctly, in the Masters, Mickelson carried two drivers, one that he could hit with a fade and one that he could hit straight. So there's no limitation on what clubs you carry as long as you don't exceed the 14 club rule.
Okay, very simple. Tim, I hope that helps. Let's go to Daniel Estrada's question. Daniel is writing from Mariposa, California, and he says, the toe on his Odyssey Dual Force Rossi 2 putter comes up when he addresses the ball. And here's a little bit about him. He's 5'7", 20 pounds overweight with bad posture and a grip near the bottom of the grip. He grips the ball near the bottom of the grip. And he shoots bogey golf. And he putts better when he hits the ball more off the heel So he wants to know if he should heat the shaft with a torch and bend it so it's more flat.
Bad idea.
Bad idea.
Yeah, the reason I say that is he possibly could change the loft of the putter as well. He could de-loft it or increase the loft and not get a positive roll. He needs to take that to a professional club fitter who can actually bend the golf club. If it has a hosel, he can bend it at the hosel, or he can put it on a loft and lie machine and torch it himself. And what that does is it keeps the head completely square, and he knows exactly which point to bend the golf club at. But in hitting it on the heel, he needs to practice putting a little bit and learn to hit it more square in the club head face, because we talk about moment of inertia a lot. And when you hit the ball towards the heel of the golf club, what you do is it closes the toe, so you're obviously not keeping the club face square at impact. So I would definitely concentrate on trying to get the putter to fit and then work on hitting the ball more in the center of the club face.
We've talked so much about being fitted for golf clubs, but we rarely discuss being fitted for putters. Can you do that?
Absolutely, you can. You can adjust the loft and lie of any putter. Traditionally, they come with about 4 degrees of loft, and some people de-loft the putter. What I mean by that is their hands come through. They forward press, basically. So what they do is they de-loft it, and it changes the dynamics of the putt. So what they do is they increase the loft, let's say 2 degrees, so whenever their hands actually come through, the putter is at a true 4 degrees. It might be hard to follow that by listening, but and vice versa. Some people putt with a lot of wrist, and the putter head comes through first, and what they do is they increase loft. So what they want to do is de-loft that putter. A lot of things you can work with on the putter. Traditionally, we don't do a lot of custom work because, for the most part, putters have more of what they call a little bit of a rounded bottom. So they don't typically scuff the ground and close the putter down and things of that nature. But there are things you can do. If you know what your problem is, we can try to get that fixed for you.
Excellent. Well, I hope Dan the Bellyman Estrada, that's how he signs it. I hope that helps. And don't heat the shaft.
Not a good idea.
Bad idea. Don't take a torch to your putter. Hey, you could take a pool to your putter and just heave it if you're not happy, or a pond, but not a torch. Don't take a torch. All right, let's move on to some giveaways here. We've been talking about, and we talked about it while you were gone, Kenny, but the Guy & Rife putter, very nice putter, high-end putter, right?
Very high-end.
Yeah. And we've been receiving some entries, even though it's off season for most people in this country and in various parts of the world. We still have Golf Smarter listeners who are entering our contest, and we have received 191 entries. I sorted these randomly, and you, my friend, get to choose between number 1 and 191. Last time, if you remember, you picked dead center because we had 200 entries. You picked number 100. So this time you're going to go where?
I'll go with number 16. I don't know why.
Usually you have a good reason for something like this.
I can tell you what why it popped in my head.
Please. Did the team score 16 points and lose?
No, it's the receiver for Michigan that was in the top 10 on ESPN 3 times yesterday with the catches that he made. It was unbelievable.
That was a great game.
No, it was.
It was that, and I was happy. I was happy that they won because they had a tough start to their season.
You know, obviously, you don't live in Florida, Fred.
No, I don't, and I'm really happy about USC winning the Rose Bowl again. But we're not going there. So, you picked number 16. I'm sure there's a couple people who don't care about football, but do want to know if they won the putter. Well, if you live in Michigan. And
there you go, with Michigan.
You win. That's right. If you live in Michigan, you win. And if you live in Big Rapids, Michigan, you have a better chance of winning, especially if your name is John Norton.
Congratulations, John. He's probably a Michigan fan, too.
And he's very happy about us talking about him, about his team winning, and he won a brand new putter. How good is it for him? What a new year for you, John. It's going to be a great year.
Congratulations, John.
You're going to break par 4 times this year. You heard it here first. I don't know which hole it's going to be, but but you will do it. All right, and before we go, let's talk about the fact that we're going to give away something else.
I love to give away stuff.
Even after Christmas, you love to give away stuff, don't you?
Even after Christmas. And you can, if you have our Holiday 2007 in catalog, you can go to page 70 and see which item I'm talking about.
Okay.
It's the Momentous Indoor Driver. What it does, you practice indoors with it. It creates a topic that we've covered before that I believe in, muscle memory. So those winter months where you're not able to go out to the driving range, this will definitely help you out.
So is there a club head on this thing?
There is. It's a heavy club head.
But you need a lot of space indoors. This isn't a normal in your...
It's not a normal length. It's shorter, so you can use it indoors. And one thing that it does is it creates muscle memory, and it also helps increase club head speed. And it's great to use, let's say you get to the golf course just before your tee time and you don't have time to go over to the driving range. This is something that you can warm up with. It's a great tool and it's a great accessory to have.
Awesome. The Momentous Indoor Driver, again, that's on page 70 of the catalog, which actually has a lot of interesting products, training products if for the off season and also for warming up. So the one that I love, the I Got You Ready, is right there on that page as well. I use that before I play every round of golf. But we're not giving away that. We're giving away the Momentous Indoor Driver. So if you'd like to enter to win, please do. The deadline for entry is noon, Monday, January 14th, 2008. We'll have our drawing on Tuesday, January 15th, 2008. And all you need to do to enter is go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. Once you're there, fill out the shipping information and the verification code and click submit. All right, and you will be entered to win a Momentous Indoor Driver. Also be aware that if you have not heard the latest episode of the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast, we are giving away a SkyCaddy SG5 handheld GPS system, and the deadline for entry on that is Friday, January 10th, 2008. And we'll be announcing some interesting information about the Golf Better podcast quite soon, I think, won't we?
We will.
Okay, we'll be doing that. All right, Kenny, that's it for today. Thanks so much for your answers and your giveaways and your presence.
Thank you very much, Fred.
And talk to you soon, buddy.
Take care.
And thanks again to the Top 100 blogger, and you can read his journal at top100golf.blogspot.com. Next week, we'll talk to Mark Frost. He's the author of The Greatest Game Ever Played, but he's written a new book called The Match. It's an amazing and true story that you've never heard about, but I promise if you read the book, you will absolutely love it. It's a great read. He's a really good writer, and you may have heard of Mark Frost from not only The Greatest Game Ever Played, he also wrote the screenplay to the movie The Greatest Game Ever Played. He was one of the main writers for the TV show Twin Peaks. So he's a fascinating man, and it's a great story. Now, of all the new things that we have going here at smarterpodcasts.com, the latest is what we call Smarter Shopping. Smarter Shopping are links to every single book that we've ever covered or authors we've talked to on any of our podcasts. So if you've heard a conversation or you hear a conversation that makes you want to purchase the book online from Amazon.com, we have it linked at Smarter Shopping page right there at smarterpodcasts.com, or of course at golfsmarterpodcast.com. You can click on the Smarter Shopping page and find all of our golf books. But whether it's golf or health related or dog related or parenting or diets, we've got links to it. So no need to go searching anywhere else. Just go to the Smarter Shopping page at smarterpodcasts.com and you'll be able to take care of your shopping needs right there. Right in time for Christmas. Good job, Fred. Have you checked out our newest golf podcast yet? Many of you have and are clearly enjoying it, because in less than a week after we launched our first show, Golf Smarter Tips podcast vaulted into the top 10 podcast position in iTunes Amateur Sports. Thank you. We appreciate that, and we hope that you continue to listen. Golf Smarter Tips are ongoing weekly golf lessons provided by some of the best teachers we've met on Golf Smarter. Currently, we've got Michael Anthony providing weekly mental game advice and Kirk Jones providing weekly lessons on how to perfect your golf swing. Each episode will provide you with one lesson and is only about 5 minutes long. Your free subscription to Golf Smarter Tips is available at golfsmartertips.com, so please get every single episode. We also invite you to check out the other new addition to GolfSmarterPodcast.com, and that is the Golf Smarter blog. You can listen to the show right there on the website. We close with our quote of the week, which is submitted by you. If you have a golf quote that keeps your head in the game or just amuses you, please send it to me so that we can close the show with it each week. This week's quote comes from Dr. Ari Albala, clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of California in San Diego and a longtime listener to the Golf Smarter podcast. Now, Dr. Ari writes to say, "As a psychiatrist, I am enthralled by the difficulty in quieting one's thoughts during the swing. As a golfer, it really pisses me off." If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at GolfSmarterPodcast.com.
Hi, this is Kirk Jones. Join me weekly on Golf Smarter Tips Podcast. Each week, I'll give you tips and advice that will make your golf swing modernized and simplified. Are you having trouble with your grip or confused about your ball flight? Tune in for these answers and more on Golf Smarter Tips Podcast, free on iTunes or GolfSmarterTips.com.